to Piercing the Veil on bbsradio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is our fourth show. I'm excited to have you back here. We left off last week with Aaron Benjamin Goines, my great friend, client, and buddy, and he was talking about colloidal silver. We also had Corey get a little bit into his story regarding his escapades, if you will, over a few traffic tickets and some misdemeanors in Arizona. So we did actually cut off that story, and I wanted to start by welcoming Corey back and seeing if you might be able to pick up where you left off.
Well, good afternoon. I'm here. Can you hear me? I'm coming in
yes,
clear.
Yes, you sound great.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so let's see. Where did we leave off? I was pulled over for a headlight, and the officer got my information, ran my plates, came back. I don't know if I mentioned it the last time, but I noticed that he went to open the door to get me out of the vehicle, but he was very hesitant. He actually opened the door a little bit and then shut it and then opened it again. He was very hesitant, and I thought that was kind of strange. It didn't really click why that would have happened, but having been ripped out of a car on other occasions without hesitation, I made note that this was particularly interesting. So, anyway, come to find out, they get me back into the cruiser. I didn't really contract very well. Otherwise, I probably would have avoided going into custody in the first place. But when I was in the back of the cruiser, I could see on the dash computer. I was kind of trying to make out the information that they had on me, and I saw do not detain. So I kind of had to rub my eyes a little bit, make sure I was seeing what I was seeing, but it definitely said do not detain on the computer dash, on the dashboard computer.
Now, Corey, I'm interested. On that computer, was it like a bunch of boxes with different, you know, sex, race, height, and all that stuff? Or was it a picture that had the words do not detain over it?
No, there wasn't a picture. It was just a bunch of text information and you know, just lines of text.
Interesting.
But there was very clearly do not detain. I did read clearly do not detain. So, to move along in the story, they brought me down to the county jail in the county that the incident occurred. And they were trying to book me into the jail. And I was basically very much politely, you know, not cooperating with them as much as possible.
Yeah, and for those of you that don't know, Corey actually touched on something that's a real big part of the jail process. When you first come in, they ask you a bunch of screening questions through a nurse, usually something like that. Then they'll actually get fingerprints, and then they'll enter and process a whole bunch of information, which seemingly takes hours for each person. So, and then they get, right, you know, they get all the photographs and all that stuff, which is basically acquiring proof of collateral to back or secure the bonds and the notes that are being traded in the background for whatever prospective charge is being floated. No, I'm sorry to interrupt. Right. I just want them to have an understanding of that. So, go ahead.
Right. So, yeah, you know, they were asking me questions and this and that, and I'm like, look, you know, nothing against you guys personally. I know you're trying to do your job, but I can't, you know, my time and my liberty and my body, I'm not going to offer up to you as collateral, and I'm not going to answer any of your questions. They also tried to have me fill out some medical form or something, like, we can't book you until you fill out this form. I don't know. I've never seen anything like that before. Of course, I politely declined to fill it out or sign it. In the background, one of the guys, I think the arresting officer, was on the phone. He's probably contacting someone, some 24-hour judge or something along those lines. Eventually, I wasn't required to fill out the medical questionnaire. They brought me in. They wanted fingerprints and photographs, and I politely declined. And I was like, why would I give you any interest in my personal property, my image and my fingerprints? I can't cooperate with you on that. No, you know, no offense, nothing personal. I'm not trying to be problematic for you, but I'm just not going to agree with giving you control over my property in that regard. Throughout the night, all right, the place was freezing cold, of course. They had two big flat-screen TVs on the wall. One was blaring Fox News, and the other was blaring some local channel. And it just so happened around that time was local news going on, equally nonsensical stuff.
So they were receiving the benefits of being updated with what's going on in the outside world. It's a little benefit in your hotel.
Yeah. So, you know, and then they offered me, you know, they offered me food, which I politely declined. I won't be taking any benefits. I won't be taking any benefits or privileges. Thank you. And so finally, they continued asking me if I wanted food or blankets and so forth. Then they had guys, I guess, who were in the county jail, come through, and right on the bench behind me, they had a fresh cart of laundry. You know, that fresh laundry smell, fresh out of the dryer and stuff. And they were folding blankets right behind me. Meanwhile, I'm freezing in the place. I'm inside my T-shirt. Literally, I got my whole body. I'm 6'3". I got my whole body inside my T-shirt to stay warm because I wouldn't take a blanket, wouldn't take water or anything like that. And so finally, they didn't even have me in a holding cell for most of the night. And then they got me into a holding cell, and they said, "Well, you're going to see a judge in the morning." And I asked, "What time in the morning?" Somewhere before 10 o'clock, around 10 o'clock. I said, "Okay." So 10:15 came. You know, I gave them a little bit of time, and I rap on the door from inside the padded holding cell. So I was like, "Am I going to see the judge now?" The guy was like, "Well, you know, we can't let you see the judge until you give us fingerprints and a photograph." And I was like, "Wow, okay, so he's negotiating." So I was like, "I tell you what, you show me, you bring me a code book from Arizona that requires that I have to give you my consent to photograph me and fingerprint me before I can see a judge. And I might consider giving you my photographs and fingerprints." Actually, the deputy went in, he got the book, he pulled out the code, and there it was. So I was like, okay, well, you know, just to make things easy, I'll roll with him. So I gave him the fingerprints and I gave him photographs.
So you accepted, you analyzed in the moment, and you
Right.
Analyzed that the probability of you seeing a judge would be greater if you went ahead and complied. He performed in good faith on his end, and see, even at that point, how does it apply to you? How does a private copyrighted statute in some privately copyrighted book, how is it being made to apply to the public generally? And therefore, how does it apply to me as an individual? And if you can't show me that, then I don't care what code you've shown me. You know, it doesn't apply to me. And until you can show me that it does, I'm still not willing to do that. You know, I might you know, provide something else as consideration for your good faith performance, but I'm not going to do that. So that's the way that you could have gone there. But, you know, as we all know, in the moment, things are a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, and I was really trying to move the process along as well. You know, I was trying to get out of there. And then there was another aspect of it too. Some of the charges were from another county. So they informed me that I would see the judge in the morning and that someone from the other county would come to pick me up to deal with the other charges in the other county. And they said that could be today, that could be tomorrow, you know, so they kind of left it open-ended. And, you know, I could have been in there for, what, up to 72 hours. So, again, I was trying to move the process along as quickly as possible. So eventually I did get my, when I requested the meeting with the judge, you know, or when I inquired about it, and I was like, look, I got to move it along. I got things to do. My time is valuable. You know, I have people who are dependent on me, so on and so forth. I would really like to see this judge immediately. You told me 10 o'clock. I gave you an extra 15 minutes. What's going on? So
good.
Deputy went away, and about 10, 15 minutes later, he says, okay, the judge will see you. So he takes me to a room, and it's a video conference.
That's right.
So he walks me into the room, sits me down, and I'm there in front of the judge. And right away, I went and I requested an in-camera appearance. Actually, he asked me for my social. He says, "Are you Corey Stevens?" Yeah, he asked me for my social security number almost immediately, the first thing out of his mouth. And I was like,
wow.
I don't feel comfortable providing you with that information at this time. And he said, okay. And he just rolled. He just rolled.
That's right. He just moved on to the next thing.
He just moved on to the next thing.
He's like, "So, can I have a surety? Before we begin, can I have a surety, please?"
Right. Can I get your routing number to your bank account?
And also the providing of any information willingly would also make it that you're okay with the situation. So everything else that you were resisting or contracting on your own terms would then fall under that jurisdiction. And now he's got in personam and subject matter jurisdiction, not only over the person of the straw man with the SSN, but over the facts of, you know, of the matter as well, and your bodily performance and what you've done up to that point. So just keep that in mind.
Correct.
Interesting. Okay, so what happened next?
So immediately thereafter, I requested an in-camera appearance, which even in my own mind at the time, I thought was kind of odd because I'm having a video conference with this guy.
Video game.
Video. So I'm like, well, I don't know how this would turn into an in-camera situation, but I asked for it anyway. And he said, okay. And
in-camera being a Latin term for in chambers.
In chambers, which means basically man-to-man, not
private.
Between a defendant and a judge, not between titles, ens legis, artificial entities, but between two human beings. Am I correct in that assessment?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I asked for an in-camera appearance. The deputy, it was a little room, tiny little room. The deputy was standing at the door during the conference. And after the administrator or judge said, okay, I can grant you a in-chambers or in-camera appearance, I turned around to the deputy and I said, do you mind? I'd like to have some privacy. It just came out, you know. In the moment, if you're aligned properly, you know what to say. I really believe that, and I've experienced it. And even if it comes out funny, it just happens to be the right thing. So he seemed a little confounded, but he also was aware through his dealings with me throughout the night that I knew a little something.
Right.
And so he stepped out of the room, closed the door behind him. And then the judge leans into the screen as if he's like getting close to the screen, so he wants to hear me, like we're whispering now, right? Because it's private. And I asked him, I said, it's my understanding, I forgot exactly what I meant, I said, but something to the nature of, could you tell me that if you understand the nature between public and private status or interaction in terms of, these types of situations? And he says, I know a little something about that. And then I went on to say, under those circumstances, are you aware of the fact that, or is there any instrument that could be made available to me that I could endorse in a certain manner to be able to attain my liberty in this situation? And he said, well, we do have a bond, and I could send that down to you if you so desire. I said, that would be very nice. Thank you very much. And that was pretty much it. The meeting was a wrap. Yeah, I went back to the holding cell. Another deputy came down with the bond.
How fast? I want to know how fast.
Within 15 minutes.
Okay. That's definitely a special situation, because normally that stuff takes about an hour to 2 hours to process normal paperwork, in my experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what type of bond was it, Corey, if you could tell our listeners?
It was a personal recognizance bond, as far as I could tell.
Which is a normal thing, released to appear for traffic tickets, but my understanding is you also had Class B misdemeanors, which were driving-related from the whole beginning incident.
Yes. Yes, there were the original citations, and then there was a couple failure to appears and things like that. So,
okay. So what do you think would have happened if you had asked for maybe like a complete end to the case, or just a termination or settlement or some sort of discharge? What do you think the judge would have said at that point?
I think he would have gone for it, because he also told me, he gave me like a little Mason, a little, free Mason sign, or some terminology as I saw it. He said to me at the end of the meeting, he said clearly, he asked me my name before the Social Security number. Of course, he asked me my name. And I said, you can call me Friend. And he said, okay, Friend. And then he proceeded to ask me for my Social Security number. I said, no, thank you, so on and so forth. And then I asked for the private in-camera appearance.
He went right from okay, Friend, which is accepting your offer, to another reoffer to get your person,
social.
Right? If he couldn't get the name, he could get the number.
Right. Right. So I would imagine that if I had my wits about me, as I was showing him that I kind of knew what I was talking about, and he was acknowledging that I kind of knew what I was talking about, the next question I probably could have asked was, how might I settle this whole matter right now? And any related charges or what have you? How might I be able to settle the matter here as we speak? Or something along those lines. And you told me when I called you about it, you said I probably could have handled the whole thing right there.
That's right.
So all that said, they brought the bond down. I endorsed it on the back. I put the account number along with my signature. And then the other people from the county, not long after that, and probably about an hour after that, whereas they said it could have been, up to 48 hours. They came within an hour and, stuck me and a couple other people in the back of a van and moved us up to the next jurisdiction. And, went through some basic rigmarole, some processing or whatever. I was given a hearing that I was to appear to, and then ultimately I was released that night.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. I mean, and it's all negotiable, always, at any time, at any location, in any place. We're actually going to touch on that a little bit before we end the show. I've got somebody that'll be calling in, I believe. And he's actually on our show before. His name's Daryl Sprout. He had a very interesting encounter a couple days ago that he successfully negotiated. It's a real big thing that's never been done before. So I appreciate you, Corey. That's a wonderful story, man. We're all obviously doing our process right now to finally resolve it, but I think you did a great job. The experience that you gained and the inside knowledge that you got that one wouldn't have gotten without going through it, I believe is invaluable. Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to run to a commercial break real quick, and then we'll be right back, and we're going to start talking about our returns, some of our techniques that we promised you last week, and just go kind of briefly into that. And that's also something we're going to segue into a YouTube video series. We are working on that. It will be released shortly. So we'll go to break, and we'll see you when we get back.
Having trouble with harassing collection agencies? Creditors breathing down your neck? Feeling like you're drowning in debt? The Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths is here to help you now. GTAC is an ecclesiastical guild association of aggressive debt assassins who can eliminate your debts, free negative marks from your credit report, and get you compensated for unfair collection practices or emotional damages. They have a proven track record of success and sustainable results, which will have creditors and debt collectors shaking in their boots. This is not your typical credit repair or verification. GTAC uses proven techniques and negotiation tactics to completely eliminate your debt or conflict, remove negative marks from your credit reports, and in most cases, GTAC will retrieve compensation for you. Call for your free 15-minute consultation today at 214-290-3053.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. We started off the show by hearing Corey's story, the final part of that he touched on last week. It's really, really interesting stuff. We have a lot of things to tell you in the last part of our show, but right now what we're going to do is just talk a little bit back and forth about some of the basic techniques that Guild of Tactical Wordsmith is using. So the first thing that we actually touched on last week as well is the return. Okay, and I just want to explain that what a basic return is you do it every day, it's just you're returning it to the dumpster or the trash. If you get something that doesn't apply to you, not necessarily somebody else's mail, but something that's misspells your name, or it's something that you don't have, like a credit card that you're not going to use, or some sort of solicitation, you can just rip it up and throw it away. Or if you want to be a stickler about your principles, you can just take that and write return to sender on it and go drop it in the box next time you're going out to Starbucks or the movies or wherever you're going. And if it does apply to you and it's something that you don't like or you don't like the terms of, then you can basically just keep it unopened, cross it out, and return it. And the burden of the offer is now rebutted. Okay, so that's what a simple return is. We've done that a lot with multiple different situations. You just need to analyze in the moment and see what the proper technique will be. Corey, what has been your experience with the returns, you know, since I've showed you how to do that?
I've gotten some correspondence from the IRS. Now, after you and I did some things, and actually part of some of the things that we did was addressing an IRS proposition or an offer that they gave me. And since then, I've gotten one letter where they were asking for 45 days to assess my accounts and things. You know, the last thing I sent them.
They were asking you for a
favor. Yeah. The last thing I sent them, you know, the last thing I sent them was, look, if there's any outstanding obligations that I or the taxpayer has, by all means, send me an accounting and I will settle the matter post haste. And so since then, I got a 45-day letter. Actually, I got two 45-day letters. And actually, I just got something in the mail on Friday. And I haven't opened it. So I just, you know, I just return the stuff back to them. You know, see previous correspondence and previous notices. So, you know, they were asking me for more time. And I didn't really say you could have more time. I just said, you know, refer back to the former correspondence that you received from me a couple months before.
Exactly. That's what I wanted you to touch on. Thank you. Because understand that even if they're asking you for something, if it's coming from them, if it's on their letterhead, if it's on their piece of paper, if they take the time to send it to you in the mail, that is their effort, their energy, their terms. Even if it's asking for something that you are agreeable to, it still behooves you to write your own terms on it and send it back to them. And that's even if it's the same thing they're asking you for. You know, I notice of counter stipulations. You know, this is return for counteroffer. I hereby notice that that you have 45 days, or I grant you 45 days to settle this matter. And if you don't within 45 days, then we both consider that it's gone and it's been handled, and I'm no longer obligated in any way, shape, or form to respond to you. Right. So yeah, you can do that, and that's either unopened or open, because if you want to see what they're talking about, obviously you need to open it. If you already know what they're probably talking about and you've returned their notice before, then you just leave it unopened. And that's a standard return. Now, another thing we've used is called a strike-through. This is actually a very popular thing with negotiations and contracts in the business world. What they'll do is they'll actually align strike through in a contract, a certain term or word or phrasing or grouping that's not liked by one or either party. They'll take their pen and horizontally strike through it. And generally, it's acceptable to initial and date your changes to convey an understanding to any other party in the future who might be record keeping, okay, who made this change and what date did it happen on, right? Sometimes the other party will come and countersign that to show that it's agreed upon. Then they come to a new revision, and then they print out the new revision. And this takes, you know, periods of months and years in certain high-level negotiations deals, and every single word, sentence, and phrase, everything has to be exact for some of these multi-billion-dollar deals. So it's the same thing in your everyday life. And these are things you can apply. So if you get a credit card offer, for example, and it is something you want, you're no longer viewing it as a solicitation. You're viewing it as an opportunity, something as valuable consideration. However, if there's some term in there that you don't like, it doesn't mean you either have to reject it or accept it as is. You can literally strike through that interest rate. Oh, I don't like 5.9 APR. You know, I want zero. Or if you really want to make sure that they're going to work with you, I'd just cut it in half or something. And I've had a company actually work with me. They came back and they sent some letter that said they couldn't. I crossed it out. I sent it back, said, refer to my previous notices. I'm still willing to stand by my previous offer. I sent it to the special department and to actual people instead of the automatons or the system. And I got a letter back with an application that had the percentage that I wanted. So I applied and I got the credit card. Right. But I took my time and my effort over 2 weeks, and because of that, I was able to get something at half price or half interest, essentially. So the return and the strike through are real big. Another thing that I like is counter stipulations. So it is basically batting or swatting their offer off the table, you know, pushing the papers off to the side onto the ground and replacing them with your own.
Yeah, can you even give us an example of that?
Yeah, say for example the parties have previous performance with each other and it's understood or established that there's a sort of agreement on certain things, and one party wants to pretend or act like there is no agreement on that term, and instead of coming in a way of renegotiation, like, hey, I acknowledge this actually exists and I want to renegotiate it, that it's already been negotiated, when they pretend like it's not there, that's when you can literally take, it's a disorder to you, you know, and you can choose to just ignore what they have. You can choose to respond if you want to take your time and your energy, if you so feel it's valuable. But generally what you would do is call the counter stipulations. So it incorporates the aspect of the return. Obviously you're returning their offer back to them, or their pretend offer, if you will, because they already know where you stand. So you just write your own stipulations on there, and you can also make them liable if they continue to try to come at you in bad faith. So that's another aspect, and that's essentially what separates it from these first two things. So the counter stipulations technique is something I use when the other party is being recalcitrant, obstinate, or seems to still want to try to work with us, but is trying to get their way in a very obtuse manner. And that's what that's for.
Can you mention, I've discovered that there is quite a bit of, there's quite a bit of remedy in the public for consumers. There's a lot of rules and regulations around consumer protection and, you know, how creditors are allowed to interact with you and so forth. Could you go into that a little bit? I mean, we talk about private side remedies a lot, but there are also some pretty substantive ways of, even on the public side, of dealing with debt collectors.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we've been very, very successful doing that at GTAC. 2015 was a great year. We had 100% success rate, won every single case in the public. I kind of want our listeners to have a sort of a basic knowledge. There's this thing called practicing law without a license that's thrown around a lot that really doesn't apply to most people. It seems to, at least in my opinion, form sort of a barrier for most people from even considering going to administrate their own affairs in court. There's this automatic, I need an attorney, right? I need somebody else to do it for me. And if that's what's comfortable for you and you think that you're going to get your results, great, go for it. I would advise you to find yourself a competent attorney, which is a very difficult task, okay, because there's a lot of people out there that are just using law books and just using what they've been told and regurgitating the stuff from law school, but not really making their own way. They're not really analyzing and studying. You know, on the other end, there's a very large amount of juris doctorates and people that really have studied the law and get these principles, but they're still bound by the bar, okay? Now, what I can do as a consultant is to assist people in coming to an understanding without giving legal advice of how easy it is to administer your own affairs in court, based on my personal experience, right? And when you talk about consumerism and consumer law, that's where it gets very sweet because, as you say, there's lots of rules and regulations. And what my experience is and what I've found is that 9.5, you know, I'm going to give an extra 0.5%, 9.5 times out of 10, there's some sort of either direct violation, direct wrong, direct non-disclosure, or some sort of indirect violation, or a myriad or number of these things that are happening from the get-go at any given time when a consumer enters into a loan or an agreement or a contract or a credit card, so on and so forth, right? From the very get-go, there's something that's wrong. They aren't provided full disclosure. They don't tell them how the funds were created. They don't tell them where the funds were shifted from and moved from prior to the agreement. They don't tell them what they're doing with the contract afterwards. They don't tell them about assignments when they assign interests or on the notes and duplicate notes and pass them around and hypothecate. You understand? So because of these things, every single, and there might be a few exceptions, but I'm going to say, because I haven't found them yet, every single consumer that's ever entered into a loan has been defrauded on some level, on some degree, without disclosure. Therefore, they have a claim.
Right.
And at some basic level, these companies know this. They're just making money hand over fist so many billion times a day from their world, you know, worldwide consumers, that they just don't care about the one guy out of 100,000 that's going to come to them and hold them to the fire. You know, they just pay them off and they're on their way. So not only does it result in the consumer getting their loan discharged, but also they can ask for their credit to be wiped out, you know, their negative credit reporting, if any. And then they can get paid on top of that. And this is all done by a lawsuit that they initiate. And they don't go through the entire lawsuit unless it's necessary. They're going to come to in honor and try to settle and say, these are my terms. I want you to give me full settlement release. I want you to wipe this from my credit report, all the negative reporting you've done to me. And I also want compensation for being defrauded and for your violations and for also emotional damages, if applicable, right? Which can be quite substantial. So that's basically the ins and outs of the public consumer law. And then, of course, you can handle your own affairs in small claims court if you have some sort of neighborly dispute, right? You want to try to come to some sort of agreement, understanding before you go to court. And if that's not possible, then that's what that venue is there for.
So. Agree with my adversary on the way to court. Lest he be, let the judge hand you off to the bailiff, and the bailiff cast you into the prison where you will stay until you pay the very last farthing.
That's right.
I believe that's Matthew 25.
Yeah, you can find a whole lot of commercial and settlement and discharge anecdotes from the Bible. I mean, it's really a remedy in a law book if you look at some of these chapters like Judges, Leviticus, all these different types of things, Matthew, which is more about a spiritual accounting and making balance than anything else. And no matter what your beliefs on that whole deal, Christianity and whatnot, you can still find the remedy and apply it to your life.
Okay. Right.
You can always find some sort of substance in anything, no matter what the form or the shell that it comes in, and extract it or duplicate it and apply it in your life in some manner while still holding your beliefs and without compromising your principles. And that's what we're doing when we're wordsmithing.
Okay. Right. Even prosecuting attorneys will do it, you know. You'll have your little meeting before your case, before you actually go into the, before you go into the judge.
That's called disposition. And 99% of cases go to disposition prior to trial. And it's just the most efficient way to do it. It's sort of like, hey, we've got some sort of leverage on you because we understand the game better than you. And if you're not going to show us you have skills, then we're going to go ahead and, operate from the assumption that you've agreed to be here and agreed to be a lamb for the slaughter.
Right.
You know, the energy for the taking.
Right.
So.
And they just check with you one last time. Are you sure?
Yeah. But yeah, okay. They're giving you another offer. So yeah, that's mainly what we've gotten into in the public. I've done some other things as well. We can get into that in further shows. And we went through a little bit of the return, the strike through, the counter stipulations. There are some other advanced level techniques that we're using. That I'm not going to be sharing with anyone that's not a member of the Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths, because I really want to make sure this stuff is being used consciously, responsibly, non-combatively, right? This is not so you beat an opponent over the head with it. It's always strike for resolution.
So, always stay in honor.
That's right. That's right. Okay, Corey, we're going to go to a commercial break real quick, and then Daryl Sprout was on our show a couple weeks ago. He actually had a story that he's going to come on and tell us if we can get his phone working. I believe he's going to call in around 5:45. So we'll go to commercial real quick, and we'll see you guys when we get
back. All right.
Got stress? Got pain? Want balance? Homeostasis? A healing state? Want to make progress instead of losing it? Zero Point Integration doesn't claim to fix these problems. It puts you back into a state where you do. Your body is far more self-healing, self-correcting, and self-adjusting than you've been led to believe. A fusion of Reiki, Zero Point Energy, and a gentle, holistic cousin of chiropractic called Alphabiotics, ZPI fosters the Alphabiotic effect without the physical moves, and even without proximity. Distance is no object, and the results are demonstrable in 7 minutes or less. For more information, call Daryl at 972-709-8796 or visit zeropointintegration.com.
All right, we're back here. Daryl should be calling in any time now. Corey, he had a very, very interesting experience where I actually had to coach him live over the phone. That was about 3 or 4 days ago, I believe. And you're not going to believe this. I don't think people will believe this unless they talk to him. I just want to remind everyone that it's all negotiable all the time, no matter where you are sitting. You can be in a position of about to die. You're about to leave this physical body, and you can renegotiate. It's all about commitment. And a little bit about acceptance, too. If it doesn't go your way, you're willing to accept that you might have to do something else or perform further.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You want to give a little preview?
I'm actually wanting him to tell the story, but what we did is something similar that I've done for myself. He had a Class B misdemeanor, and his charges were basically a DUI, where he passed a breathalyzer test, and the cop made him take it multiple times. And the third time, the cop punched in a bunch of numbers and a bunch of keys and things like this, and suddenly came out where he had supposedly blown twice the normal limit. And so with a gleeful smile, he then arrested him, placed him under arrest. And at that point, he had to deal with it. So he got out, he got hired an attorney. The attorney basically told him to take a deal and to sit in jail. Daryl, by the way, is extremely disabled in his right hip. He's in horrible, horrible pain. So that was not an option for him. So we came across each other and we met each other, and he agreed to be a client of mine, and I consulted with him on how to best resolve the situation. And he sent in a few offers to the county and the prosecutor, which went unanswered. So then we decided to put him on the do not detain list and also acquire the case. So we did a process whereby we gave something of value, and then we issued a bond and acquired the case. And then noticed the IRS and told them to come in and take the taxes from the money and to hold the court accountable for discharging the matter. And needless to say, he got a offer in the mail after that, which we looked at without opening, which you can do if you hold it up in the sun. And it was an offer for a warrant. And so we returned to sender, refer previous notices, and we sent that back. And after that, he... he had an interesting experience, and if we can get him on in a few minutes, then he'll definitely enlighten a whole bunch of people as to what really happens when you stay in your power. Okay. So, I mean, while we're talking here, what did you feel when you were in that car and you're being in the back? Did you feel fearful a little bit, or maybe just a little anxious, and you were still in your power when you saw that do not detain?
Well, to be perfectly honest, and I wouldn't recommend this to anybody, okay? As I consider myself a student of yours and a student of others in these matters, I've come to find that a lot of I've collected a lot of information. I've studied a lot of things, and I could have just paid off these original citations. It was basically a speeding ticket from 2 years ago, probably more than 2 years ago. And I could have just as easily written a check of, Federal Reserve notes and sent it off and taken care of it, which there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, if you're not prepared to deal with taking other tax and so forth, it's the best way to handle it. Get it out of the way, move on, pick your battles. But I believe that I intentionally let this thing go on and build up because I wanted the experience.
That's right. There's a few of us that will be willing to do that,
when I was kind of upset with myself because when I got pulled over, because it was a headlight deal, I was like, wow, I know that headlight has trouble. I had some extra bulbs in my house, and I just didn't change out the headlight. So I was kind of upset with myself in the moment for not staying on top of it, where I would have avoided that interaction altogether.
Interesting. Well, secondly, we actually have Daryl in. Daryl just came in. Sorry to interrupt you. Let's pull him in because we've only got about 10 minutes left. Hello, Daryl. Welcome back.
Hello.
Hey.
Interesting interface calling into this show.
Yes. I just wanted our listeners to hear it from the horse's mouth, literally. So I gave him a little preview of what happened. If you can just go into your experience, I'll let them know. You basically got pulled over. We believe it was pre-planned, right? We believe it was an interdiction on the side of the road, but you got pulled over right in front of your property. You have a gate and a notice. You pulled about halfway in, and one police officer pulled you over, and then in about 10 seconds, there was the entire police department, 8 other officers. And then what happened from there? And just keep in mind, we've got about 10 minutes left.
Yeah, I can be pretty brief. Actually, it was just a trip to the corner store, which I felt was probably one of the safest trips I could make, and boy, was I wrong. And basically, his excuse for pulling me over, and it was just one of those things where I'd left my gate open, which made it perfect. I could pull just onto my property, and he had to be just off of it. And the reason for pulling me over was a plate mismatch. Now, it is true, I bought this vehicle used. I remember there being a little bit of confusion at the tax office about whether I needed new plates or not. They said, oh, no, they're not that old, you'll be fine. And so, I don't know, my guess would be that long ago, this particular apartment had gone past my gate, and so they pulled the plates on the vehicles here and said, okay, well, here's what we can use to stop him. So and I did hand him my passport, not a driver's license. And after a while, which gave me enough time to call you, which was pretty cool because that meant I had my law consultant on speakerphone sitting on the console as I went through this process, which really helped me. I knew I couldn't escalate. I knew I needed to keep everything calm and not get disheveled about it and just continue to answer. Mostly questions with questions, but in a sense, standing on my truth. So he did come back and said, but by this time there's several more officers, and there was no sirens. The fact that other units are showing up is all done very quietly, right? And he says, well, we have a warrant for you. You need to step out of the car. And I said, I'm not aware of any warrant. What I am aware of is that my time and my body are not collateral, and that there has been a constitutional challenge to the issue that you're discussing, and I know what you're referring to, but it's been handled, and you need to get with your supervisor, and you need to have them contact the 24-hour magistrate and confirm that I am on the do not stop, do not detain, do not question list. And so he said, okay, I'll get my supervisor. Of course, the next person I talked to said exactly the same things. And at that point, the original officer escalated a little bit, and he said, we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way, but you're definitely leaving with us. And I said, with all due respect, I'm not a I'm a peaceful man. I'm not a flight risk. I am not aware of any warrant that is pending. The issue that you're addressing has been handled, and I need you to contact the magistrate, and you will see that I'm on that list. And by the way, I'm handicapped, and by this time I've already put up my little handicap placard on the mirror, just so they see it sitting there. And I do have a bad right hip. You know, I said, okay, well, first of all, I can't consent to being taken off to be arraigned, because that would be tantamount to cruel and unusual punishment while I'm waiting in a cell. And you can take me directly to a magistrate, but I'll need medical transport, or I will eventually, I consented to be taken directly to a hospital. And at that point, and still, I've never opened the door, right? All I did was open the window. At one point, I did sort of offer the officer my keys in trust. I say, here are my keys. I'll offer them to you in trust that you will take me to a proper medical facility. Do we have an understanding? And he backed away from my keys.
You didn't want to touch your keys.
No. So the only person I opened the door for was the EMT. And by that point, he's got a gurney right beside my my van. The only person who touched me was the EMT. I actually had him help me get my right leg up onto the gurney, because that's the leg, you know, the side that hurts. They wheel me. And by the way, I also asked the EMT to lock my van for me, which he did. I asked the officer as we wheel by, I said, would you get my gate for me when we leave too, please? And he said, yes. And by this time I realized that all the rest of the cops are gone. All I've got is the original guy. Okay. And I'm beginning to get the feeling that he likes me. I'm growing on him. You know what I mean? I'm an interesting story anyway, which I won't go into, but he's got some of that background, by now. And he said, well, I've got something else to tell you. And so the EMTs put me in the ambulance. They got me strapped in, of course, you know, and whatnot. And they wheel me into the back, very artfully, by the way. It's amazing what they can do. You hardly feel it. The cop says, well, I've talked to my supervisor, and because it's just a Class B misdemeanor, we're not going to take you. I said, you mean I'm free to go? He said, well, unless you want to go to the hospital, the ambulance can still take you. And I said, no, that'll be fine. You can have him wheel me back to my van. I had the shortest gurney ride ever.
So the bottom line is, Daryl made United States history, because I'm not aware of anybody else who not only stood on the do not detain list, had the supervisor actually call a county magistrate while he's being pulled over, had them make up an excuse and let him go on a Class B misdemeanor, and then all of a sudden he's got a babysitter the next day. You know, the cops are sitting outside of his house when I pull up, and they're just watching over him. It's not in a threatening or harassing way. They're actually watching over him now. And the case is done, right? They thought they could test him and get him to renegotiate and get the body as collateral. And when they found that that wasn't the case, then they understood that he merited the reward of the process we had done. And therefore, it was under the discretion of the magistrate whether or not he applies the do not detain to that situation. And it seems like he did. So we got about 2 minutes left. I really want to thank you for coming on at short notice. We were waiting a couple, I'm wondering if you're going to be able to make it. And we're very grateful for you telling that story. It's just a wonderful, wonderful thing.
It was quite the experience.
Just to see it work.
I think we briefly got into the do not detain list. My understanding is that there's a few different levels. There's local and state, where a judge has discretion. And that was probably like in my case and in Daryl's case as well. And in my case, I had outstanding obligations to them that I hadn't settled yet. So that didn't go immediately in my favor. Then, from what I understand, and I don't have direct corroboration of it, but I've heard it from other folks, is that there's the local and state do not detain list where there is no judicial discretion, and they just got to leave you be. And then, of course, there's a federal one whereby all states are notified. And so that's my understanding of that. But to actually, Darryl actually be able to call it out and say, I'm on that
Darryl list. Graduated. I think he definitely graduated from the first to the second. It's going to be over from here. It's been wonderful. I appreciate you doing the forum style thing with me, Corey. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up now. And next week, we're going to have a guest on. His name's Frankie. He's actually another one of my clients, but he's been in the Patriot game for a while. Just learning. You know, he hasn't really been participating in some of these more extreme things that these guys are doing, but he's just learning and analyzing what they're doing so he can do something else and do something different that's going to work. And in light of the recent Burns, Oregon things that are happening, I just wanted to kind of touch on that and maybe dedicate a portion of that show to how to do it right. So I really appreciate everybody that's listening. Thank you very much. Keep following us. We're going to have everything up and running in about a week or so for our blogs. And next week's show, we're going to have Frankie on, and we'll talk a little bit about the Patriot thing and the updated stuff that's happening. And we'll see you next week.